Actually, I'm sure it has. It's the first time you ever see it, you're by yourself. So you do a lot of training with an instructor in your back seat. You do some solo. But the very first time you see an aircraft carrier circling overhead, you'll have an instructor lead, but you're by yourself in a T-45 as a flight student, which looking back, having no clue what I was doing. But they train you up, and you really do know how to do it. You just, in the retrospect, looking at the amount of experience we had, it was adrenaline's pumping. We go down, we take our first trap, and we qualify all by ourselves in the T-45.
So when you're training, how long do you practice carrier landings, you know, on the ground?
So we do a whole phase in flight school. It's called the carrier qualification phase. It starts when we do this in the fleet, too. It's called FCLPs, or field carrier landing practice. So in the Navy, we spend a lot of time learning how to land on the ship. And so we'll do upwards of more than 100 passes in flight school to what we call a carrier box. It's painted on the runway with a forensic lens. Basically, it's a lens that tells with very precise fidelity our position on glide slope. And we'll get over 100 passes there in flight school on the field before we actually are certified safe for CQ by our landing signal officers, our instructors, and then we'll go to the ship and qualify there.
So you look down, you're by yourself, you look down and see the boat, right?
Yes, sir.
How much can you recall about what you thought and felt at that moment?
I do remember. I have a snapshot in my head of that first look. We're flying formation, so we're watching our lead. We're in a four ship over the carrier. It was USS George W. Bush. It was the first carrier qualification of that boat. I remember that in 2007 or 2009. I remember looking down, and it was a couple double takes of how small. You read about this, or many of you have, is how small that carrier seems to a naval aviator, and that just reinforced that fact in my head. Like, wow, that's. It's a really small boat. I don't know how I'm going to get here to there. We had about one more turn and holding. And then he'll drop you off in the overhead, which is our maneuver we'll do over the ship at 800 feet to kind of separate the flight into our required intervals to trap or land aboard the boat. And then honestly, after that, I think I kind of blacked out. I don't remember my first few traps. The next day, I slept on the boat. And then the next day, I remember those when I had calmed down just a little bit and it started retaining. But those first few arrested landings, you'd think you'd remember that, but I honestly don't.
So did you bounce first, or did you actually trap hook down the first time?
I couldn't tell you for sure what we did. I mean, I know what we did. I don't remember what we did. But I know, as being a landing signal officer, as an instructor, that we'll never let the first pass go with a hook down unless there's some kind of extenuated circumstance with fuel or something. And the honest, the reason we do that is for safety. They're untested. We haven't established that trust between student and landing signal officer. So we're getting that extra measure of safety. If we had to wave them off or give them a power call, that hook is not going to go ahead and hit the back of the ship or the round down, kind of a hook slap. So first passes are generally hook up in the odd, unlikely event that he has what we call fly through down, an unsafe pass where we have to wave him off and just prevent a hook slap.
Right. So you qual, how many day traps, how many night traps?
The initial CQ, flight school, before we were actually winged, it's just day traps, so just day flying.
Don't embarrass me
I'm not going to give you, it's over 10 traps we do, but yep. I don't remember the exact number in flight school.
So then the next step is to what airplane?
Yep, so after T-45s, the initial phase, you'll select whether you're going strike, or you're going E-2-C-2, you're going to fly to E-2 Hawkeye, the C-2 Greyhound. I selected the strike route, so we'll finish that, and then we'll out of that, we'll select where we're going
to
fly. So.
It's to say hi to
when
the
I selected, it was either Growlers, Super Hornets, or Hornets. So I selected Hornets, or we call Legacy Hornets, F-18A through D.
Single seat?
Well, you don't select that yet.
You don't?
I'm sorry, for the Navy, they're all single seat Hornets. For the Marine Corps, Marines will say they actually have two seat F-18D squadrons as well.
So where'd you go to do that?
So I went out to San Diego and flew with the Marines in their fleet replacement squadron, called the RAG. And I learned a Hornet with the Marines at VMFAT 101, the sharpshooters out of Miramar.
So that's Miramar? That's where they shot Top Gun, right? I think the movie was shot
there.
Yeah, Miramar. So how long are you there flying the Hornet at Miramar?
I was there. That's about a year, give or take, syllabus.
So a year to learn to fly that airplane.
Well, so it's not necessarily learn how to fly. We learn how to fly in flight school through the T-45. And we do, there's a phase when you flew in the Hornet or the Super Hornet about how to fly that particular airframe. But more importantly, when you get into these strike fighters, it's how to fight the airplane. The airplane's not just an airplane, it's a weapon system. And it's able to carry a plethora of other weapon systems. So it's not only using all the weapons, it's how to use them. It's how to use them. With the proper tactics and in cooperation with wingmen. So that's probably three quarters of that syllabus is more of the fighting aspect of flying the Hornet rather than simply the flying.
So then the next step is to go where?
Yeah, so you finish the FRS, or all naval aviators do, and then they'll report to a fleet squadron. So I reported up to Lemoore to Strike Fighter Squadron 192, the Golden Dragons. We immediately entered workups.
Lemoore is in?
In California, I'm sorry. California, near Fresno. It's the West Coast Master Jet Base for the Navy. And then did my initial fleet tour with the Dragons.
So how long is that first fleet tour, or your first?
First tour, it's very, the Navy, it's very cookie cutter with our timelines. It's a 36-month tour, so I reported there early 2011 and left in 2014.
And how often do you fly, day and night?
In the fleet, we're flying day and night. So Dragons are a great squadron. We had an opportunity to deploy twice aboard the USS John C. Stennis and Carrier Strike Group 3 and Carrier Air Wing 9. We deployed to Western Pacific and also in the 5th Fleet, which is more of the Middle East, theater operations in the Arabian Gulf and North Arabian Sea for two deployments. So
night traps, night landings.
Oh yeah,
talk about night landings.
So, night landing. They've changed throughout the years. So, in a nutshell, a night arrested landing is an instrument approach. If you want to simplify it in its most basic form, and we hear the stories of the guys that came before us, flying in A4s and F4s and the systems they had before, and their that forensic lens I was talking about wasn't as precise in the 70s and the 80s. I think you need to listen to these guys talk about it to appreciate how good we have it today. And I tried to do that. So as scary as everyone says it, the famous studies where guys' heart rates were faster when they're landing aboard at night than they were when they're getting shot at in Vietnam. They actually had it a lot harder than we do today, just to kind of put it in perspective. But it still is very scary. Every time, I wouldn't say scary, it's very... it's very intense every single time.
So every time?
Every time.
Is not something like, you get back on the bike and it's cool.
There's a new appreciation after you've deployed and you got to land at night. But when you're back home flying and your mission's done at night and you're just going to RTB, and we used the quote, take the pack off and just kind of ride it home and land at the airfield. But whenever you're flying off an aircraft carrier, especially at night, but even so during the day, as soon as you take off, I know at night, as soon as I took off, the first thought in my head would be, I'm going to have to land on this thing tonight. And that would, the weight of that would, no matter if we're going into combat or if we're doing a training mission, that would just kind of be sitting on my shoulder until the stop of the arrested landing, and take a deep breath, and then you go back in the ready room and try and relax then, when your leg's usually shaking a little bit after something like that.
Yeah.
It's all good fun.
So... Your fleet flying, but all of a sudden, when does the possibility and how of the Blue Angels arise? What happens?
So, going through that my tours, flying for the Blue Angels honestly was never something on my radar. I did my tour in the Dragons. I went back to that same squadron I was a student at in Miramar. I was an instructor with the Marines starting in 2014. And that's when my options started to open up based on my experience, my time in the Hornet, and my timing for my follow-on tours. And long story short, I saw that I had an opportunity to apply. And it was always something that was kind of so far. I didn't think I didn't have a chance. There's so few guys selected. But I always respected and loved the Blue Angels. I grew up watching them. Definitely part of what Spartan wanted to fly. So I saw that I had a chance to apply, and I had to put my name in the hat. It was just and so I had the hours. I had the timing. So I put in an application, and application process is fairly unique.
How competitive is that, and how many others are considered in the pool?
It's competitive. It's definitely competitive. More so it's competitive, there's a requisite level of experience that that isolates a specific portion of the aviators that are eligible to fly, or to fly with the team. I was very fortunate to get selected last year.
So when you come to the Blues, do you immediately go into the and be one of the pilots in the four-ship?
No, so we'll get selected, and we leave very quickly from our previous tour. So I got selected in July. By August 5th, I was already moving to Pensacola. And honestly, our job from day one is just to learn. And that's until we leave, our job is to learn. And honestly, that's the story of being an able aviator, and I mean, in life in general, is we're lifelong learners. We gain experience, but there's always so much more to learn and so much more to aspire to, always trying to make ourselves better. And all of that is just magnified at the Blue Angels. So from day one we showed up, we're just trying to learn, big ears, little mouth, and we'll follow the team for the rest of the season, starting in September all the way to the end of the season in November, just observing. And then about a little bit into that period, towards the end, they ask us what position we want, and then the team decides what they think is best for the team.